Welcome back to 3CR 855 AM on your dial. We are now joined with Nigel Bertram, who is a professor of architecture at Monash University. Welcome to the show, Nigel.
Thank you very much.
So we were just going to interview Nigel about this article that has recently been published in The Conversation titled "Demolition Should Be the Last Result for Melbourne's 44 Public Housing Towers, Retrofit and Upgrade Instead." So, you know, throughout the article, it kind of comes up that the state government has used the excuse that the high-rise flats do not meet current building standards, and they've said this to justify the demolition of 44 public housing towers. However, this has repeatedly been challenged by activists, public housing residents, and architects. Can you explain to listeners why, you know, in not meeting the current building standards, as they put it, is not actually a good reason in and of itself for demolition?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there are a range of reasons that the government have given in the media and on their websites for why they need to be demolished, but there's been no sort of technical information or concrete sort of case put forward to that. The regulatory standards, I mean, if you understand that regulations are always changing, so our current regulations in 2025 are different, even to very different to the ones in 2005. So even relatively new buildings do not meet current standards. And plenty of people in Melbourne and throughout the world live happily in buildings that were built in 1960s or even the 1860s with some upgrades. So there's not an expectation that every single building in the city has to meet the current day regulations. It has to be safe, and it has to be, you know, it has to have upgraded fire systems and all these kind of things. But all this is possible by retrofitting and upgrading existing buildings, such as the millions of 19th century terrace houses and other, you know, town halls and other great buildings in the city that have been upgraded.
Yeah, and just looking to some of these alternatives, like you've just said, and there are actually examples of this around the world. Can you tell listeners a bit about what's involved in the updating and renovation, redevelopment projects that have happened that do not involve demolishing estates in a bit more detail?
Yeah, it's really important to understand that this is not an issue limited to Melbourne and its 44 towers. Like, it's an international issue, because post-war modern housing of the type that we have in Melbourne was built everywhere, and they were all built at a similar period of time. So they're all now reaching their 50 or 60 year old need for upgrading. Around the world, people have looked, because, you know, they're often the homes of people, you know, in vulnerable sections of the community, people who don't have the ability to just relocate and find another place very easily. So, or there are various forms of social housing. So people have studied really hard how to improve amenity and quality of life for the residents in these buildings, but not disrupting them. And there's examples in France where they've added whole glazed balcony sections to one side of a building, and then once that's in place, removed the external wall, and the apartments have got bigger with a balcony and much more sunlight, for example. And they're just all these issues of how to build. They're just construction management problems or technical problems that, with the right expertise, it's possible to work through. The key thing is that we need to say at the beginning that what really matters is the first priority should be the well-being of the tenants, and then we can work through how to improve the buildings in a way that improves the lives of the tenants. Not to look at them from the point of view of a piece of real estate or a piece of building fabric that is, you know, because it's always a little bit annoying for a builder to look at an old thing compared to a new thing, because you don't quite know what's contained. It's not a reason to demolish, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And that speaks to sort of the perspective that the government takes on housing, rather than looking at it not only as a human right and, you know, as, you know, something that is a fundamental sort of keystone part of people's lives and a requirement for living a good life, they're kind of looking at it, you know, with a bit of a utilitarian logic and very much from a market-focused lens. So you have talked a bit about what's involved in these alternatives to outright demolition. Can you talk a bit about what the benefits of retaining and reusing are, you know, in terms of, say, climate and, you know, from, you know, the perspective of, you know, emissions and so forth?
Yes, certainly. It's pretty much accepted around the world that there's been a lot of focus on things like energy bills and energy ratings of appliances. In other words, how much energy you use in your daily life. But there's this other thing we need to understand, which is what's called embodied carbon, which is the energy that's embodied, for example, in a brick, that is all the energy that was used to make that brick. And that includes digging up the clay, transporting it to a place, firing it in a kiln, stacking it in pallets, bringing it to the site and erecting it. So all that process has a lot of energy embodied in it. So if we can keep that brick in place and not throw it away, that is actually saving, or it's avoiding spending all that carbon again, if that makes sense. So even if you have the most U-Butte bells and whistles, new technology, sustainable building that you can do as a new building, if you've knocked down an old building first to make that, you're starting way behind. And people are realizing that it's really important from this point of view to do everything we can to keep and renovate buildings rather than knock them down. I mean, you can think of it in a common sense terms. It's just kind of wasteful of materials and energy and all the demolition that goes to landfill, etc.
Yeah, of course. And we are sort of heading towards the tail end of this interview, but maybe upon reflection of the sustained attack by, you know, multiple consecutive governments at multiple levels, attacking public housing as a political institution, do you have any sort of reflections about this or any final comments you'd like to leave the listeners with?
Well, it's not really my field to talk about, say, public housing versus social housing and all the very complicated nuances of that, except to say that delivering subsidised social housing is a really important part of all economies. And what we were trying to say in this research was that if you just think about it from a purely practical and financial and environmental point of view, it's cheaper and better to renovate rather than knock down and rebuild. So even if the government only cared about the financial side of things, we've analysed it and said, actually, you know, it's 25% cheaper to renovate and to effectively a brand new refitted apartment in these buildings. And that translates to across 44 towers, that's 11 whole new towers you can build with that money. So there are also many other ways of improving these estates, which have had no maintenance for decades, and they're quite run down. And we can add new housing in between these buildings, for example. There's plenty of ways in which the urban design could be increased. But all of those things are over and above this decision of, do you knock them down or do you retrofit the existing structures?
Yeah, excellent. So it's interesting to see that even within the framework and the logics that the government have been applying, the decision doesn't actually stack up or accord with their own reasoning. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Nigel. We are out of time for the interview, but it was a pleasure speaking with you this morning, and hopefully we have an opportunity to interview you again.
My pleasure. Thanks very much.
Awesome. Bye, Nigel.